Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 211, and it's proudly brought to you by our ever-growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, if you're not already, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. James, good morning. We're recording this fairly early on a Tuesday this time.
Yeah, it's a bit of a busy schedule this week. I feel like we say this more and more, but you had some diving concerns. You're still in Bonaire, which is rad. This is week two of our Bonaire 50% Bonaire episodes. It's the highest percentage of Bonaire we can promise to the audience these days.
Yeah,
and yeah, you had some diving concerns, and I have some meetings. they come up occasionally. not exactly my favorite part of the business, but you've got to get it done.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, we're recording a little bit earlier. I probably the only thing people would notice is a little bit more gravitas to the old voice, like we've said in the past. Not quite warmed up yet.
Right, and Gashani and I were up early this morning, so we went for a dawn dive. We were probably in the water by 6:15, so that was about 2 hours ago, thereabouts. And yeah, we did a good, I think it was a 62-minute dive, just cruising around on the reef. It was kind of the opposite of a night dive, where it starts kind of dim and then gets darker and darker. This is the opposite. So it was fairly dark when we went down, and then gradually started to brighten up, and by the time we finished at 7:30, it was nice and bright, the sun kind of gleaming through. It was gorgeous. And then we encountered a green sea turtle that was hanging out at about 20 feet. I don't know if it had been sleeping and was just woke up when we arrived, but it was such a privilege. I mean, seeing turtles is certain places it's common, but here you're lucky if you see one. So it was really great. Yeah, it's probably made my voice a little gravelly as well. I mean, I think sucking on dry, compressed air for an hour probably does something to your vocal cords. So if I have the vocal fry going on, that's why.
Yeah, well, we're just getting cooler as we go here.
Yeah.
It's not like we smoke a lot of cigarettes. this will be a fun episode. It's a return of one we haven't done in a while. We've been going back through kind of the catalog lately because there hasn't been a ton of watch news. That's been in the zone and timed correctly. So we thought it'd be fun to go back. We haven't done a perfect product since episode 148, so not too bad. This will only be the fifth one in over 200 episodes. But before we get to that, Jason, aside from, morning dives, what have you been up to in Bonaire?
Kind of spent a lot of time in the water. I think, this trip we're diving on average maybe twice a day, which is less than what we used to do. And last night we had the tanks all set up and we were going to go for an evening dive. And then it was this perfect sunset and the sea was really calm right below our apartment here. And I just said, what do you say we kind of leave the tanks behind and just kind of go for a leisurely swim just down here and watch the sunset? And it was just perfect. I mean, the water had that kind of silver mercury sort of effect going on, and the sun, you could just see it sink and fall below the horizon. I don't know. It's one of those special things that, when it's Minneapolis in January, I'll be thinking back to that evening. So we've been doing a lot of that. And then, this is probably our at least 10th visit to Bonaire, and we've never actually gone over and dove the East Coast, which we're on the West Coast. All the shore diving is on the West Coast. There's, 60 named shore dive sites here. And there is a dive operator that runs dive trips off the East Coast, which is the windy side of the island. So you get a lot of chop and waves, and it's just a rougher scene over there. But we're going to hook up with East Coast Diving this afternoon. And they've got a former Dutch military rib boat that they take out of a harbor over there. And we're going to go try to do some diving there. And apparently the wildlife is quite different. You get sharks and rays and a lot more turtles and tarpons and stuff. So really looking forward to that. So that'll be, that's why we're recording a little early, because we got to get out of here by about noon to get over there and get all set up. So that's
very nice. I hope it's a great dive.
That weather permitting, I'll have photos and a report on that next week when I'm back home. But yeah, that was really cool. And then, I'm still wearing the Apple Watch Ultra. I think yours is on its way now, finally, right?
Yeah, I believe I should see one. I don't have a tracking number or whatever, but Apple was kind enough to reach out. I think it was actually fortuitous that I didn't have mine yet. I think it lent to a pretty good episode last week.
Yeah.
Certainly a lot of engagement, ton of comments. If you're not doing the comment thing on Substack, by all means, it doesn't cost anything to come in and comment. Just make an account and you can chit chat with folks. But there's a lot of good feedback about, we got a bunch of emails and some DMs about the water ejection and what it's actually doing. Apparently, it's actually the speaker that it's getting the water away from. I'll put that in the show notes if you want to see like a slow mo of it, of the watch actually shooting water out, which is kind of cool. But no, I think we had a good one and should have it shortly, which I'm looking forward to. I've got a list of activities for the next few months that I'd like to put it through its paces, and then hopefully put a, you know, maybe it's a week on the wrist, maybe it's a big hands on. I'm not quite sure yet. We'll see what Hodinkee wants.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to your thoughts on it because I think you're a bit more accepting of kind of dipping into the lifestyle of a connected watch. You've done longer term kind of wrist you know, tests with Garmins and things like this, and I think you'll kind of put it through those paces, whereas I'm much more of a, you know, take it off right after an activity kind of guy. I just can't kind of get my head around wearing it 24/7. So I'll be curious to get your take on it. I think both perspectives are very valid. I think you know, for Apple, for people considering the watch, et cetera, because we all wear our watches in different ways. And I'm still, you know, just wearing it for activities and taking it off right afterwards. And I'm enjoying it when it's on my wrist. I think I told you a few days ago that it was kind of a game changer for me when I went for a run the other morning. And, you know, I wear AirPods. I listen to music when I run, and I've always had to figure out a way to carry this heavy iPhone with me. And the Apple Watch Ultra stores music, and the action button can be programmed to do certain functions. And so I had it set so that it starts my running workout and a selected playlist of music when I press the button. And it was such a game changer for me to like go. It felt so freeing and lightweight to just go for a run with just my AirPods and my watch, this very lightweight watch on my wrist. And I really enjoyed that, and that was great.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the pluses for sure. I like that it, you know, these have a cellular platform.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, there's a piece of me that wants to see, you know, if I had this on my wrist, could I just leave my phone at home for a weekend?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and then just be very selective about how I respond, because I'm probably not going to type out a lot of messages on that little screen, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So that's something I'd like to try. You know, I've had a lot of trouble the last, all of my life, but let's call it definitely the last couple of years, like figuring out what's a healthy way to have my phone, right? Because as a freelancer, as a contractor, like you kind of always want it there and you don't really want to miss anything.
Right, right.
Because it could literally be like money or you know, your chance to make money in a few months or something like that.
Yeah.
And it does lead to this sort of inability to enjoy like a weekend, right? And sometimes my phone will be at 10% and I won't charge it because I don't mind if it kind of dies or if it has to be on a charger when I go for a walk or whatever. And you know, lately, even when I go on a bike ride, I've been biking a ton since the cooler weather came back. Yeah. I've been out almost every day.
Yeah.
I go, you know, either do a few laps through Hyde Park, which is a nice, you can really find a pace and I can get a lot of like type 2 heart rate zone work done in 20, 25 minutes, which is nice.
Yeah.
And for that, I usually have to put my phone, you know, in a little bag under my seat so that I still have my podcasts or my music or whatever I want to do for that 30 or 40 minutes.
Right.
And I think this, that could be a cool change. So I've never had the, and maybe you haven't done it, but I've never done where you add the phone or the watch or something to the cellular carrier.
I did do that for this, but you know, the funny thing is that I've been on airplane mode since we got in Bonaire because I didn't want to, you know, deal with paying overseas rates or get a separate SIM card for my phone here. So I haven't really had a chance to try it. I did make one phone call before we left, and it was clear. It was amazing. It was fun to be able to actually do a phone call on my watch.
That is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Very fun. So, yeah. Speaking of fun, you know, sort of gadgets and nerdery, for those of you who, you know, and it's a good chunk of you who haven't been listening to the last Q&As, we do a monthly Q&A if you're a supporter of the show, either at $5 a month or $100 a year. And that's kind of the main benefit for the $5 a month. And not only does it mean that you could send in questions, but every month we do an hour to an hour and 25 minutes of questions.
Yeah.
And you get to hear other people's voices and that sort of thing. And like, I find that it's pretty much once an episode, we have a question about accuracy or the precision of watches.
Yeah.
And like either our personal feelings about it or, you know, my Seiko movement's not running well. I want a watch that has all the appeal of a Seiko, but actually keeps good time. All these sorts of things. So I finally just broke down and bought a timing machine.
That's cool.
You know, I consider it kind of, I'm going to try and make it part of the instrumented testing of watches moving forward. So whether it's a brand new watch or otherwise, I like the idea that I can just clip it into this machine. I'm still learning how to like really trust what it says, because it gives you a result in like 5 or 10 seconds.
Oh yeah.
But that's only one position. It measures, you can measure it in several positions, and I need to figure out how you kind of average those out and whether the machine does that or whatever. But I bought a Weishi number 1900 multifunction time grapher. It was about $350 Canadian. So that's what, $250, $270 US, maybe even less.
That's not bad. That's not bad for a watch enthusiast gadget.
Yeah. And I'll put it in the show notes, and I'll also put a link I found kind of explaining. I mean, like, unless, so the classic, the one that you'd see in your watchmaker shop, or if you're very keen about this and have a bench at home, is a Weishi.
Yeah.
Which is, I believe, the Swiss one, and they're very low four figures. I saw them for $1,200.
Oh,
that sort
really?
Of thing.
Oh, wow.
Which, okay. Which, if you're a professional, that's nothing.
Yeah.
A lot of it, it's a thing to have a little printer.
Oh.
So you do the right. test, it prints it out, and you can like staple it to the receipt and say like, "Hey, look what I did." I don't need that functionality.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, from yeah. what I can tell, there's almost no difference between a number 1900 and a number 1000.
Hmm.
So I only bought the 1900 because it was available in Canada.
Hmm.
U.S. Amazon and eBay have way more options than what I was seeing. So I went with what was available. It's, how big would it be? It's probably the size of a small iPad in total. It kind of leans on your desk on its own. And then there's a microphone system that you clip the watch into that's like a separate accessory.
Yeah.
I'll put a picture of it in the show notes with a watch in front of it so you can kind of understand its size. It's not big, but I wouldn't call it small either. It's bigger than I thought it was going to be. I think the 1000 has a more simple screen, so it's a little bit smaller.
Hmm.
Maybe. I don't actually know. It's hard to judge the size of stuff on when you buy it on the internet.
Yeah.
Anyways, this couldn't be easier. You plug it into power, you plug in the microphone, you clip the watch in against this little microphone. It has like a sliding spring thing that really securely holds the watch.
Hmm.
And then you turn it on, and it basically immediately starts grabbing the beat rate, and it gives you a little line to show you how steady the watch is. It gives you amplitude and beat error, and then a reference for the current position of seconds per day. And it starts out kind of guess like it gets more refined as it goes.
Yeah.
So I am going to learn kind of best practices. The idea is to do a really fun story for Hodinkee where I time a bunch of my watches.
Yeah.
And just kind of say like, well, it is what it is. Like this one's 2 minutes plus a day or whatever it is, whatever they come out to. But I know that people will be curious. I let the SPB143 sit on for quite a while in three positions, dial up, crown down, dial side, and dial down.
Yeah.
And it averaged about -4 for me.
That's really good. That's
so.
Yeah.
That would explain why I don't have a problem with my, 6R
right.
movement
right.
in that one. But I will say, like on a single dial up on the SSK, it was +25.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure I would mind necessarily for $500 the +25, because also when I went, I think it was dial down or maybe left side case down. So how or crown down. So like your hand at your side.
Yeah.
It was like -9.
Yeah.
So if it's falling between, if it's averaging out somewhere between -9 and +22, also not that terrible. We really hold watches to an impressive standard. I think, you know, if you're within a minute a day, that's still like 99% accuracy, well over, really.
Right, right.
But I do understand people's point with that one. So I figured this is something that needed to be done. And I'm sure I'm going to frustrate / make some brands very angry, when they send a watch that's nowhere near cost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm going to learn how to use it properly and then put a big story together with my own watches. I've got, anecdotally, my best performing watch is about 60 years old, but was regulated by Jason Gallup.
Okay.
So that tells wow. you how much comes down to the person or tool right. or machine yeah. that regulates your watch.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. It might be a month from now by the time I really learn how to use this thing and trust the results enough to put a story out.
It raises the question for me, you know, your comment about it being your old watch being regulated really well. And it makes me wonder, you know, with something like the SSK, mm-hmm. when people talk about, oh, affordable watches, cheap watches, not keeping good time, I that would lead me to believe that it doesn't necessarily have to do with inferior materials or build quality necessarily. It's more
yeah, I think it's factory tuning.
yeah, the time given at the end, you know, the mm-hmm. human touch, that makes the difference. That would be my guess, but I don't know.
I've read lots of stuff from people who are smarter than me that say, like, when you see a movement that has a very wide accuracy statement,
yeah,
you know, negative 20 to plus 15 or whatever some of these Seikos can be,
right,
negative 10 to plus 25, that's usually not so much that the movement's not capable of better. It's that they're making them so quickly, mm-hmm. and to keep costs down, they only do so much in terms of regulation.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to bring some more fun and maybe a little bit more detail to the review. So I bought this machine. And if you have any questions about it, I guess let me know in the comments. I'm happy to ask. But I will do a story where I'll probably time like 10 of my watches and just we can all have a laugh at how poorly they do.
Yeah, that's really cool. I remember years ago, do you remember that app for the phone called Kello?
Absolutely. Yeah, that used the microphone from your...
yeah. I still see, I just checked as you were talking, I still have that installed. It needs to be re-downloaded on my phone. I don't know if they're still around or supporting it.
Or sorry, was Kello the one that used a photo?
No. Kello was the one that used
Kello used the microphone from your ear pods.
Yeah, which I thought was cool. I don't know. I remember I got wildly different readings depending on like when I would use it. So I'm not sure how great it was. It probably doesn't compare even to the Weishi.
But I remember you told me about one that also used a photo, right? Where
you
took a photo of the watch kind of laying down and it referenced the network time on your phone.
Yeah, it was called, I've got it here. I've got that as well. Twixt. It was called Twixt. I have to re-download that too. I should try these again. Yeah.
And then that one, however many, I don't know if the app told you, I can't remember, but however many hours later, you're supposed to take a second photo.
Yes. Yes.
And it would compare you kind of delineated where the seconds hand was. You told it.
Right. Right.
And then it would compare that to network time. I think that makes a lot of sense. Like that's very simple, doesn't cost much money, mm-hmm. and it's like practical to your watch.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what a fellow like me is going to do with beat error.
Yeah.
or amplitude. Right. Right. Like, I guess you could know if you have a problem bad enough to take it into a watchmaker, I guess.
Yeah.
But no, that one that used the photos, I think, was actually quite clever. And if I remember correctly, it also kept like a log.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
Which I like. Yeah. So I think that one could be, that would be enough for me. Like if I was buying a watch
mm-hmm.
and the person included the report from that app saying like, look, dial up, this is how it's running.
Yeah.
Over this span of time, here's the results.
Yeah.
I think that kind of stuff is nice. And I'm planning to possibly sell a couple watches in the future. And this makes me feel a lot better about sending a watch knowing how it's running rather than saying like, hey, it's running well, no problem.
Yeah, the classic line that people use, myself included, it's like, well, it ran well, you know, when I wore it for a day or something like that. It's like, well, what does that really mean? Yeah.
With a watch, not so much necessarily, but this, you know, brings a little bit more data to it. So that's fun. I've rambled too much about my latest silly tool, but
no, that's cool. That's really cool. Before we jump into our wrist check, I guess I just want to give a quick acknowledgement to the fact that I've been sorely remiss when it comes to shipping out supporter kits that people have ordered. We've also gotten a couple of we have a few remaining extra large t-shirts left in the TGN shop, and we got a couple of orders there. I obviously have been away for now a week and a half, and I'll be getting back to shipping stuff. I put a note on the website, but I'll be getting back to shipping stuff out next week when I'm home. So apologies there, and thanks for your patience to everyone.
Yeah, and also speaking of patience, we'll have an announcement in the next couple episodes about how the next year of the supporter system will work. It's not changing greatly, but we have a few perks that we're going to talk about. So if you're looking at re-upping, which I think will start around, for those of you on annual, on the $100 a year, should start in the next 2 or 3 weeks, probably the end of October, early November.
Yeah,
we should have some data for you about what to expect and whether or not you want to do another $100 for the year or to go down to $5 or like whatever makes you comfortable, of course. But we'll have some data on that too in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about that stuff. I think it's we come up with some neat neat perks that I hope people will get excited about. So
yeah, me too. So let's jump into wrist check. What have you got on for more adventures in Bonaire?
Yeah, looking at our notes, I think we've got kind of similarly inspired watches on today.
Yeah,
yeah. This morning on my dive, it's still I've got it on an Erica's strap, which is still slightly damp from this morning's dive. I'm wearing the Skirfa MS21. This is titanium diver from our friend Paul Skirfield. It's got the blue dial, the blue bezel, quartz movement, sword hands. It's just, I keep saying to people, you know, like this is such a TGN watch for one thing, but it's also a watch that like it's almost qualifies as a no-brainer to get. I mean, we talked about it in the One Watch draft. This is a sub $250 watch that is, it's got a Swiss quartz movement in it, a T2 titanium case, tested and designed by a saturation diver. I mean, you can't go wrong with this thing. It's just fantastic. I mean, it's worth it for the domed crystal and the bezel action alone. It's just such a high quality watch. So I couldn't be more thrilled with it. So that's what I've got on. That's what I wore this morning for a dive, and I'll see what I go for the East Coast diving today. I'll have to get back to you about that.
Yeah,
one.
For sure.
Yeah. How about
I actually just put a watch recon alert on my phone for the MS-22.
Oh, nice. Is that one steel or is that titanium? I can't remember.
It's titanium. It's very similar to what you could get with the D1.
Yeah, yeah.
But you get a fully gradiated bezel.
Yeah.
Which I want.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm in the market. If you happen to be listening and you've got an MS-22 and it's not getting anywhere, feel free to drop me an email, thegrenado@gmail.com. But it looks like two or three have gone in the last month and like they're under $400.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just a ton of watch for $400. Yeah. And I feel like I've been like planning whether it was a Treasure Seeker or Titanium Diver 1 or something. And I think the 22, and if I can't get one by the time the 23 comes out, maybe I'll try and play my luck at getting a 23. We'll
yeah,
see.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you can score one. They're cool.
And then speaking of great quartz watches, I'm wearing the CWC 1983 reissue.
Mm, so good.
I don't know, man. Like, I had loaned this to my dad for a while, and he kind of fell in love with it. And then I traded him. I saw him over for an early thing for kind of a little family party, Canadian Thanksgiving,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff on a few days ago. And I don't know. Like, this is pretty close to a perfect watch.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if I was a little bit nerdier about it or if I had the time and the skill, I would brush it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the polished case is the only thing that doesn't resonate like perfectly with me.
Yeah.
But I love the simple accuracy of a quartz movement. The lume is incredible. I love the aesthetic and the fact that it delineates in a lineage. So this isn't simply an homage. It follows an MOD spec.
Mm-hmm.
And
that bezel.
That's the other thing that I think I didn't necessarily give this credit when you first gave it to me, because this is a gift from you. Thank you again.
Yeah,
this might be the best bezel on a watch under $5,000.
Wow, that's high praise. That's saying something. Yeah, are you talking in terms of its action, or are you talking about the appearance?
I don't mind the appearance is great. You know, it has a sort of acrylic or sapphire insert of some sort.
Yeah,
and it's loomed at the 10-minute markings,
mm-hmm.
So 10, 20, 30, etc. But for me, it's the action. It's a 60 click.
Yeah.
It perfectly aligns. It has absolutely nothing. The only sound it makes is the click.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do it next to the microphone. A little bit of ASMR. I just think it's like seriously impressive as far as what they've managed to do for, this is about a $750 watch.
Yeah.
Which in some worlds you could say is a lot for a quartz. But you're buying into a really high level of specificity with this
mm-hmm.
watch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about watches. It's what I like about pretty much anything.
Yeah.
You know, this one is fixed spring bars, so it's pretty much NATO only. I have nothing but praise for these. It's basically a perfect everyday watch. You can spend, they're almost always sold out, so they must also be a very popular option. You can spend a bit more. I actually don't know how much because they're always sold out. But you can spend a bit more and get a mechanical. Do you have any idea of like the ballpark for those? Is it under $2,000?
I think it's right around $2,000 for the 1980 reissue. I think they called that one with the same bezel and the auto. Yeah, I tested one of those when they first came out, and they're cool. And I guess I have the standard automatic with the not the kind of the faux Bakelite bezel, but
right. And how's the action on that? The same?
Same. Yeah. I mean, just really good. I the one quartz that I have remaining now is a 1995. It was an issued piece, and the bezel's a little well, granted it's an old watch now, but it's not quite as yeah. good. But you know, just yeah, these are good. I think the combination of quartz, good lume, and then the fixed spring bars, it just feels like the kind of watch that like
it's super toolish.
It's so toolish, and it's like you throw it on a NATO, and it just feels like this is the kind of watch you just when you don't know what else to wear, or when you just need something to work, you grab that one and you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah. I mean, the bezel thing sounds extreme, but if you get a chance to turn one, just go ahead and give her a spin.
Yeah.
And it's the action that does it. You know, the Pelagos has those the ball bearing action. Mm-hmm. Monta does an incredible bezel for the money.
Yeah.
And I think this is right up there. So maybe $5,000 is a little extreme.
Yeah.
But if I made a list of the five best bezel actions under $5,000, which might honestly be the five best bezel actions at any price, like I genuinely don't know of one significantly better that sits out in my mind than a Pelagos.
Yeah.
So that might be the best bezel action out there. The Monta, like I said, is way up there. It's the ability to have like a really heavy 60 click,
mm-hmm.
where there's no wiggle, which is tough to do on 60. I think it's one of the reasons 120s become popular. There's no slop. There's nothing like that. And then it's so the actual noise of the mechanism is so nice that you can set it without looking.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like you want to do five, you get five.
Yeah.
And yeah. No, I really like it. It's been a treat to have it back, and I think I'll probably be wearing it for the next little while.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I'm glad that's getting some wrist time. I didn't realize your dad was wearing that too. That's really awesome. What did you swap to him?
Yeah, because I took back the SKX 007.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because I was doing that 3-on-3 for Hodinkee, and right. then I also wanted it for a comparative photo with the SSK 003. The project's still forthcoming. And then, I swapped this one back. But he had been wearing it a ton and that sort of thing. So
nice.
He got some wear out of it, and then I took it up to the cottage this weekend, and it's perfect. Like
yeah.
middle of the night, the loom is like just the right brightness to actually see it.
Yeah,
and be able to read the time, and then yeah, being able to time things and that sort of thing, bike rides and otherwise with the bezel.
Yeah,
super nice and yeah, I'm just a sucker for a 60 click bezel that's well done.
We should maybe that should become a new part of the show is we can do holding our bezel up to the microphone and doing a different bezel every week.
Oh sure, yeah,
yeah,
bezel moment.
Yeah,
for
the bezel
sure.
moment. Yeah.
Well, speaking of great bezels and otherwise, you want to get into the main topic for this one?
Yeah, let's jump into it. I'm really happy that we're revisiting this kind of genre of TGN. I think, you know, going back and pulling out some of these old concepts from shows past, I think is a lot of fun. And when we were coming up with the topic, this was a fun one to dredge up. So
yeah,
perfect product. You know, perfect is I guess you could put it in quotes. It's more of a product that, you know, we have loved and used over the years, sometimes unsung products that maybe we, you know, you often overlook. I as I was trying to come up with something, I was looking around at what I brought on this trip and I don't know, a dive trip is always a good way to sort of tease out what you rely on and what's good and kind of what gets kind of tossed back in the basement when you get back home and then pull out, and it just works. And so that kind of inspired what I chose for this week. But looking at your list, I see something that I know you've used a lot as well. So let's jump right into it. You want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first for sure. So with perfect product, like in the past, we've done everything from, I actually have the list here. I went back and looked, like we've picked things for like camera lenses, great boots, sunglasses, Patagonia Nanopuff. I feel like that's one we've talked about a ton.
Yeah.
Bikes.
Yeah.
Ways to make coffee. And the last one was episode 148 was very camera heavy. It was a Nikon F3T and a Leica Q.
Right.
And this one's a little bit more varied. And we're also bringing back something we haven't done since the first one, where we're going to pick two products that are just whatever we wanted and then two from within the watch space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's been enough time since episode 76 that we've found some nice stuff in the watch space. And that's certainly looking at what we're going to suggest. I think I think it was a good choice.
Yeah.
But my first one is actually something I have talked a ton about on the show in the past. But it was only in having a discussion with you recently about bags you were packing for Bonaire and trying to figure out what was the right bag for the trip. And that's always a struggle. And I kind of realized I hadn't had that struggle in a long time. Because I got a bag that I really like for travel and work travel, and that's the Tenba DNA. When I got mine, it was I think 2014 or 2015 for Baselworld. So it's like this is the one 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah,
and now they call it the DNA 16 Pro, and it's a messenger style camera bag that doesn't look like a camera bag. It's pretty low key. It stands upright when you put it down, which is very important to me. It's hard for me to really decide where to start with, because I've had this bag on probably over 100 trips around the world in that time. I would say maybe extensively over. And any time that I derivate from using that bag, I regret it. I'm not much for messenger bags in general. And I think even when I use this, unless I have a problem where I need both my hands, I don't use the camera strap. I pick it up like a briefcase, or I use the luggage handle,
the sleeve
panel on the back that allows it to sit on top of my roller case.
Yeah.
And that's basically been how I've traveled since like 2015. I want to say it was 2014. It might have been 2015. I couldn't find the original receipt. And it's been kind of my go-to bag for that span of time. The one I have is technically for 15-inch, but it takes my 16-inch MacBook Pro without issue. And then on top of that, I would say, you know, they say that you can have a full-size camera system with a 70 to 200 mounted and three other lenses with room for accessories, and they're definitely not wrong.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing I really like about this versus a traditional backpack, is when you go through security with multiple cameras, multiple camera batteries, all sorts of wires, you have to know how to take it out so that your bag isn't consistently being pulled aside.
Right, right.
Because it's not so much that like it adds a ton of time to have your bag secondary checked, but if you're in a huge line of people that are getting their bag secondary checked because they have like 35 loose bottles of shampoo in their carry-on,
right,
you're going to be like sitting and standing for a long time. And when like things at the Toronto airport are like they are now, you're already in for an hour and a half worth of standing and pulling your bag around.
Ugh.
So cutting 20 minutes out of that is not a bad idea in my world.
Yeah.
So there's an efficiency to this system where you have a nice big bag and this insert that very easily comes out. The insert can be arranged for specific gear. I keep it in a two-panel setup where one side holds taller things like camera flashes or on-site bags. I think I've talked about these before. They're like kind of like a thin pencil case, but they have mesh on the front so you can see what's in them.
Yeah.
And those sit upright, as does the Alpaca Essentials thing that I talked about last week, which can slide right in, kind of standing on its tail. And the other side, I can fit my Q, my M10, probably a spare lens. I typically travel these days with a 50 and a 90. And then the Q does wide angle or natural wide, 28. And then you have all the batteries that you might need. And then on top of that, you have things like chargers, cables, you know, intermittent batteries, like a battery to recharge your phone or whatever when you're on the go. And all of that can fit in there. And then I can usually also do that with my toiletry bag.
Yeah.
Which is just a little leather pouch that I keep, you know, the usual stuff in. I find that there's only one airport in the world that will force you to use those clear plastic bags. And that's London Heathrow. Everywhere else says that you have to use that bag, and then they do nothing about it.
Oh, yeah.
So I've stopped doing the whole moving my stuff in and out of a plastic bag. The nice thing is the camera insert does not actually fill up the entire width of the bag. So you end up with another kind of natural pocket on the one side, like maybe an inch and a half, which I really like. And that's another place where I can keep things like, I usually keep a plastic bag in there so that if it's raining, I have something I can cover cameras with, or, you know, like a big Ziploc, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it has a weather cover, so you can cover the whole bag, but if you're supposed to still shoot in the weather, then that's not that convenient. And then you have a front bunch of organization, which can hold cables and a phone and your passport and that kind of stuff when you go in and out of security, if that's what you want to do. I usually keep that stuff in a jacket, and the jacket comes off all as one unit. Again, so that I have my phone if the bag goes through security and has to be double checked.
Yeah.
And then finally, you have a rear section which can hold full size paper, all sorts of pens. Like it has a natural sort of little office organizer in the back. And then each side has a big sort of expansive mesh pocket. And it's big enough for a nano puff. You can cram a nano puff in there. Certainly the vest fits without issue. I'll typically put things like the charger or something I'm going to grab on the plane because it's going to be right at my feet. This is also where I would keep something like my Sony noise canceling headphones.
Yeah.
XM1003s I have. The modern one doesn't look to have been markedly changed. The one they sell now for $200. I also can't believe this thing's $200 given how well it's held up. It's just, it's outlasted so many other bags that I've had, and the usefulness of that bag. Like I said, I don't really use the shoulder strap. But the other thing I realize is, like, now when I go to the cottage for a weekend, I just use this bag. I take the camera insert out of it. I put some clothes in the bag. I tuck a camera into it, and I just put it in the Jeep.
Yeah.
It works as a weekender for a couple days. It's a little tougher when it gets cooler because you're carrying heavier layers.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely you want to go somewhere for a couple days in the summer and take a little bit of gear. It's still the right bag for that.
I'm curious, you know, how you use this bag. Like, on a typical trip, let's say it's a 3-4 day trip. Are we talking like a rolling, I don't know, do you have an Away, like a roller bag?
Yeah,
like
I'm still using the Away carry-on size, the smaller of the two.
Yeah, so you're using something like that, or, you know, I have a Tumi Tegra Light, so something that size, like a carry-on size roller bag, and then this, mm-hmm. right? This is for everything else. This is for the layer you want to put on the plane, your camera, your headphones, your laptop, and your passport, for example. And then this slides under the seat, and the Away bag goes in the overhead bin. Is that kind of how you use it then?
Yeah, the only scenario where something would be in the Away bag beyond clothing would be if I want to take what I would call an intermediary bag. So that would be like my Observer Collection Tango.
Yeah.
Because it can fold, it lays flat like a paper bag.
Yeah.
I will sometimes put that first into my Away and then pack over it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Especially if I'm in a little bit of a higher end sort of dressier scenario. It's nicer to have that and just put one or two cameras in it.
Yeah.
Then have the Tenba. But the Tenba, like I said, stands when you put it down. The bottom of the bag is waterproof, so you can just put it down in a puddle.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't even look anymore. The new one's actually 1.5 inches of waterproof.
Yeah, it looks like it. Looks like it's almost like a bucket bottom.
Exactly. Yeah. So I love that because you can be anywhere. I've set mine down in snow, wet grass all the time, right? Yeah. Like you're shooting early in the morning and there's dew on the ground. Don't care. Right.
Yeah.
Won't make any difference to the bag. Nothing's ever gotten wet inside the bag. The new one, much like the old one, also has, and this is a weird one that people don't understand until you kind of show it to them, has quiet Velcro.
Thank goodness.
It's called like whisper quiet.
Yeah.
So if you just pull the top flap, you know, willy-nilly, it makes a normal Velcro sound.
Yeah.
And if you're in a quiet room with, you know, 200 other people watching an auction or you know, somebody's doing a presentation,
right?
And you're the guy like ripping a 12-inch panel of Velcro.
Yeah, yeah, you're not going to be very popular.
Look, quiet Velcro doesn't sound like it's important.
Yeah.
I use it all the time. And this one, if you pull down on the Velcro on the flap, pull it down towards the bottom of the bag, and then away, it makes no noise at all.
Huh? Wow.
It has two magnetic clips that you can very easily manage to pop on and off in the dark with one hand at a weird angle under a plane seat, the rest of it.
Hmm.
They work really well to secure the flap and the Velcro, but they don't do any more work than that. So it's not a buckle, it's a clip.
Yeah.
I think it's super intelligent because the combination of that and the Velcro, especially because the handle is sewn into the back of the bag and then is sewn across half of the top of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
So when you pick it up, it weights itself really nicely in terms of a balance.
Yeah.
But it also puts all of the handle pull on that Velcro. And then so they've re-secured that really smartly with these clips.
Hmm.
That's actually the only thing that's ever failed for me on the bag is the stitching for that handle after 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like I said, I almost never use the shoulder strap. I'll just carry it by hand.
Yeah.
In and out of cars, in and out of planes, the rest of it, that threading finally pulled free while I was at Watches and Wonders this year.
Hmm.
And I briefly thought, like, buy another one for $200. Who cares?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, but also I could easily fix this.
Right.
So when I got home, I coated both sides of the area in super glue and then stitched it with some very heavy wax thread. And like, sure, if you open the flap and look for the threading, you can see it. It's like a gray interior, light gray interior with this weird ham-fisted threading I did.
Yeah.
But it's just as strong as it was, and I'll just keep using it. And from the outside, you can't tell. It hides right into the nylon of the heavy nylon webbing of the handle. So yeah, and then otherwise, like when I'm on a plane, I typically have like a costume I wear.
Yeah.
You know, I preferably pants with some good pockets. So I really like those Live Free pants from Doer. I just bought another pair.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of my go-to. I can sleep in those. They wear kind of like sweatpants. You know, they have a adjustable cuff at the bottom so they're not catching on anything.
Yeah.
And then you have a couple thigh pockets, like cargo style pockets. And then since I've gotten it, like I wear that Planet Earth shirt from Volbok anytime I travel.
Yeah.
The way that it deals with like hot or cold is really nice. You can really adjust the neck if you're a little cold. It has a couple different sort of clips and snaps. You get enough pockets to do the passport and everything without it ever feeling like it's digging into you or bothering you. And it's up high enough that it's not around your waist where you have the seat belt and all that kind of stuff. So I wear that a ton. And then I have a couple overshirts, you know, the green one that I've worn on video a few times, or I have one from Pedro and Taylor I really like. And it's all really nice stuff. But the bag is for me, it's essentially perfect. And I'm always tempted to buy a new one.
Yeah.
Just to have it. But then this one's still going. Like it's literally at my feet right now. I've got a compass clip to it and a couple of those night eyes beaners and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's the right size. It's easy to go in and out of security. It doesn't look like a camera bag. It doesn't say any of the big camera bag brands on it. Like Tenba seems to be used by people who prefer kind of a subtle play for their camera bag.
Yeah, all their products on their website they have a very anonymous kind of look to them, to the point of being bland sounds negative, but I mean that in the best way. I mean, they just look like they kind of just melt into the background without drawing attention.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for $200 to like just to round out this rant, but like for $200, it's a bag of unbelievable quality.
Yeah.
I've owned Filson bags that cost three times as much. The only other brand that I come across commonly that makes similar quality stuff is Topo, but they don't make anything like this bag.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the format and how considered it is, all the touch points are really nice. The organization's great. The size is nice. It's got a top zipper, so if you are using the camera strap, the shoulder strap, mm-hmm. you can use the zipper to reach in and grab a camera or a battery or whatever you need without putting the thing down, like if you're moving.
Yeah.
But mostly I like that it's like a pretty subtle, low-key bag that has all the quality and tech that I want. And, you know, they've made some innovations with the new one. One, you can get it in a different color. Mine's just kind of this grayish tech color.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can get it in blue, which would almost be enough for me to buy another if it wasn't for being wasteful with a bag I already have. You know, I would say if they did a collab and made this bag with Filson.
Yeah.
That'd be the only way they could make me want one more, is like to give it a little bit more of a rustic look rather than a techie look.
Right.
But other than that, it's basically a perfect bag as far as I've come across. It was an easy decision for perfect product.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a good model for what we're after with the show like this, is that, you know, it's something you use over and over again that you don't think too hard about. But like then when you start to consider and look around your space, whether you're on the road or at home, and you're like, yeah, I use that a lot. And it just works. Stuff doesn't break. It's very functional. Yeah,
and it's repairable in my experience, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Cool. Tenba, if you're listening, you should be very impressed with this bag. And if you could find a few more retailers in Canada, that would be cool too.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
How about you? What have you picked for today?
Yeah, so mine's quite a bit different. It's a much simpler product in that it has no moving parts. it's less than a third of the price. And I happen to have it with me here in Bonaire, which is, you know, when we were talking about the show, I was kind of looking around at all the stuff I brought, which isn't a lot, you know, when you're traveling and a lot of it has to do with diving and photography. I mean, that's fairly limiting. But my pick today is a pair of Dauphin Hawaii Pro Classic swim fins. This is a pair of rubber swim fins that I've had on many trips over the years, including, you know, took them to Sri Lanka, took them to Jamaica a couple of years ago, Bonaire on several occasions, and, you know, used them at home in the lakes around home. And I just think these are such a minimalist, kind of perfectly created product in that, you know, oftentimes when we go on dive trips, we've got all this heavy duty dive gear and we're doing, if not cold water diving, here in Bonaire, you have to tiptoe across a lot of kind of rocks and coral to get into the ocean, or you're diving off of a boat or whatever. And I tend to wear neoprene booties, dive booties with, you know, fins, heavy fins. And if I just want to go for a snorkel or for a swim off a beach or off the back of the apartment here, do a little free diving or snorkeling, I don't want to have to put on neoprene boots that are going to get soggy and kind of loose on my feet and have to wear big heavy fins just for kind of kicking around. And so I came across these Dauphin Hawaii swim fins several years ago, and they're $66. So, you know, really qualify as a very affordable thing that, that, you know, can almost be like an impulse buy if you're looking for something like this. And they've worked just so well in so many different occasions for kind of just all around water sports activities. And I can't say that they would be heavy duty enough in terms of their propulsion for, you know, pushing around a, an actual scuba tank and gear if you're actually scuba diving with them, although I'm sure they might do okay. But so much of the time that I spend in water is not scuba diving. It's snorkeling, it's free diving, it's open water swimming. I used it for kind of a few of the open water swims across the lake near my house in the summertime. And I just think for people, even, you know, listeners that are not necessarily certified divers or scuba divers, you know, who doesn't go to the beach regularly or do snorkeling every now and then or just swimming at the family cottage or something on a lake that, that wouldn't benefit from something like this where they pull on onto bare feet. That's a really soft rubber. You know, they're, I don't know what the term is, not ambidextrous. I'm not sure what the term would be for feet, but they can, you can just pull them on either foot. They float in salt water. I just think they're great. They're, it's just a really minimalist product that I just hardly ever think about. I just throw them in my bag. They can pack into a backpack or clip on with a carabiner on the back of a pack. I just feel like this is the kind of product that or gear that you'd want to take on any sort of a trip that you're going on if you're going to be close to water at any point, because there's very little weight penalty. They're very small and they're just so useful.
This is great. You know, it's funny because I feel like we both kind of picked things that maybe the, we each on the other side might need.
Yeah.
you know, we talked about bags and I recommended the Tenba not 2 weeks ago for you.
Yeah.
And then even just yesterday, I was leaving the cottage and, you know, kind of packing stuff up because it's towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
And I brought back all the snorkel gear so it doesn't sit in, you know, negative 20 weather for no reason for the whole winter. And I was trying to decide, like, should I bring my, you know, my wetsuit boots and my huge Vortex V16 fins back?
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of thinking, like, if I go diving in the next few months, it's going to be somewhere tropical.
Right.
And I should look into buying, like, what the move is for an inexpensive fin that's also a good fin.
Yeah.
Because fins can cost a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I bought a pair for my eldest daughter earlier this year, which she used all summer and had a blast in. But, you know, they're scuba pros. They're nice fins.
Right.
But they're a very small size.
Yeah.
Because she is. And they were like $150.
Yeah.
And you look at a pair of these DeFins and I kind of like, oh, man, all right. Well, as soon as I have an excuse,
yeah,
you sold me on it. I love the way they look, the different colors they come in. I love the idea that I don't have to wear a booty or anything with them. You can just put them on and go. And I agree with the idea that I don't think this would be something just for snorkeling. It's just for being in the water.
Yeah.
And gaining some mobility. And it really, that $66 is kind of like a no-brainer, right?
There's something very freeing too. I think after many years of scuba diving, there's something about just going in the water with, you know, swim trunks, a dive mask, and these fins. And if you want, you can clip a snorkel onto your mask and you're set. You know, there's all sorts of adventures you can have in shallow water,
for sure,
in a very minimalist way. And it feels very freeing to do that. And certainly you can snorkel or you can swim around without fins at all, but these just sort of add this little bit of propulsion that is really nice if you're, you know, in a bit of chop or in the ocean, or let's say you want to kind of, you know, do a little bit of breath hold diving to kind of kick down, you know, 20 feet to look at something on the bottom. These are just perfect for that. And there's something too, like when you handle these fins, you know, dive fins are kind of made for maximum propulsion because you're pushing. If you've ever tried to kick while wearing full dive gear without wearing fins, I've got an interesting anecdote. When I was getting my open water certification, you know, during the first couple of days in the pool at the dive shop, I had packed everything along that I needed except my fins. And I was there and we were doing some kind of a, what do they call it? The tired diver tow or carry or like that, where you're supposed to push your buddy along in the pool. And the instructor was, you know, a little cheeky. And he's like, I think I had called Gashani. I said, can you run down here with my fins? Cause I forgot them. And while I was waiting for her to arrive, like the instructor was like, well, you're next. And I had to like push my buddy around the pool wearing my dive gear, and my buddy was in full dive gear, and it was impossible. You can't move. You cannot propel yourself in the water barefoot wearing full dive gear. And so dive fins are made with a stiffer material, a synthetic material, to give you maximum propulsion. Now, these are not made to do that. And so it's a really soft rubber. They're really comfortable. And when you handle them, they don't feel anything like dive fins. They have this really soft, almost like a child's rubber toy. They say it's made out of Malaysian rubber, like genuine rubber. And there's two different kind of composites of rubber, a stiffer one for the fin itself, so you do get some propulsion, and then an extra soft version of it where, you know, for the foot pocket. So they're really comfortable on the feet. They don't really chafe. The back strap is kind of flexy, so you can kind of strap it on over your heel. And I don't know. I just love these things. They have a certain nostalgic feel to them. They were developed by an Australian who lived in Hawaii in the 70s and was working around a lot of surfers and ocean lifeguards. And he kind of just saw a need for developing some inexpensive, effective swim fins. And they just sort of have that nostalgic kind of 60s, 70s, like free feeling, tropical, you know, waterman sort of appeal to them. And I just love them for that. You know, if I were to put together kind of a kit, you know, a kind of a TGN kit, it'd be like, you know, throw these in your Patagonia Black Hole backpack with, you know, a dive mask and your swim trunks, and, you know, you're good to go. You know, maybe a Scurfa or a CWC on your wrist, you know, some kind of inexpensive knock around watch that you can get wet and just go have a ball. I think they're perfect for that sort of thing.
Well, that's excellent. Yeah, good pick for sure. So as far as the product, the non-watch products go, I picked the Tenba DNA 16 Pro, which is available for about $200. And Jason picked the Daffin Hawaii Pro Classic Swim Fins, which are about $66, which feels like a steal for something that's doesn't really leave anything on the table. All right, so with those perfect products out of the way, obviously, like I mentioned at the top, we're going to also do a product from the watch space that we really liked. And it would be non-watch, I think, is how it usually works out. So, Jason, why don't you continue with the good picks and give us your watch-related perfect product?
Yeah, again, another simple product. I mean, this is something you can strap your Scurfa or your CWC on with your Duffin swim fins. This is it's the CNS ribbed NATO strap. So CNS is a brand run by a woman in Sweden. She used to go by Cheapest NATO Straps. But as some of you may know, there's a guy out there who's very possessive of the term NATO for NATO straps. And he likes to kind of...
Very litigious.
Yes, he likes to reach out and make people cease and desist from using the term NATO to sell straps. So she has changed her business name to CNS. And she sells a ribbed NATO that, you know, ribbed NATOs you can get from a variety of sources. CWC sells a really nice one, among many others. I happen to pick up a handful of these from CNS, and they are less than $10 each.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing. You know, NATOs aren't a huge outlay of money in general, but under $10 is pretty awesome. I like the look of ribbed straps. She's got just a ton of colors, which is, you know, might or might not be your thing. I tend to kind of not go for, I have an orange one and that I don't wear very much. And then I've got kind of a cool blue, you know, I just like the gray, the tan. They've got a number of them. They are a bit stiff, which, you know, out of the box, like you put them on, they're like, boy, this thing's like really heavy duty and stiff. But I found that like when you're wearing them for diving or for anything active, that stiffness kind of holds up well when they get wet. They're easy to still thread and put on. And then they do soften up with use. So, you know, there's not much more to say about it. It's a NATO strap, so I'm not going to go into great detail about them. But for less than $10, I think you can't go wrong. You know, you can get like four of them for $40. So.
That's killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they look great. You know, it's funny. The patterning is along the strap rather than across.
Yeah.
Which is the antithesis of the Uta NATOs that we've come to like for so long.
Right.
But yeah, a ton of colors. Some of them, like even look at the Santa Fe one, which is kind of looks like almost like a belt.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like with a bunch of different color and some pattern in it.
Mezcal.
Yeah. Yeah. Mezcal. Yeah. These look awesome. And yeah. I was happy when I saw them mention on Instagram that like the outcome of that jerk's lawsuit or cease and desist or legal activity wasn't that they were going away, because other people just go away.
Yeah, like, right.
A lot of people that sell NATOs online are one person.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's who this guy attacks.
Yeah.
He's not coming after, you know, the top people or the big brands or the people who make the NATOs, but just the endpoint, anyone who uses that term in a capacity for the strap specifically can get themselves in some trouble.
Right.
And I'm glad. I mean, who cares if it's cheap NATO straps or CNS and watch bands?
Yeah.
I'd be fine if the whole community just stopped calling them NATOs.
Mm-hmm.
Let's figure out another term and just end it for this dude.
Yeah.
You know, it's just good that they're still around, and at $10, they're maintaining the, you know, what CNS kind of stands for, right?
Right.
That's a lot of value. Cool stuff.
Yeah.
Good pick.
Yeah.
Mine is not inexpensive. mine's actually probably the best, in my opinion, the most perfected version of this item. We've talked about it before. I don't think I could do a watch pick on a perfect product and leave this on the table. I think we've talked about it enough. I now own one, and that's the Hasler Instruments bolt action spring bar tool.
Yeah, it is perfect.
This is the last spring bar tool you need to buy. It is, if you've ever come across a tactile turn pen, it's built to that quality, but it's also built to order. He doesn't carry stock typically. Jason, you know Tom, but I was lucky enough to meet him, as was my wife, in Chicago for Windup, and we bought, he had prepared some stock, some limited stock, so we were able to buy one face to face. Look, I'd support a lot of people with a small business that are like in our scope, even if their product wasn't necessarily the quote unquote Rolls Royce of X. This is the Rolls Royce of spring bar tools.
Yeah.
It's beautifully made. It's, you know, milled from steel. It has a beautiful clip. You can use it like a pen, like you can store it like a pen if that's preferable for you. I just leave it on my desk and it's become, you know, an object of beauty. Mm-hmm. In many ways, but I also, you know, use a spring bar tool probably once a day, maybe a little bit more on average. And this has a nice tip. It uses a mechanical sort of bolt action with a spring, so you can retract the tip into the body for, you know, putting it into a bag or your pocket and not having a sharp tip. And then the cap actually unscrews, and you have a pusher instead of a fork. So yeah, if you're interested in getting one, he doesn't have a website, which I love. This feels, again, I love the kind of the way the internet used to be, and I feel like Hasler's right in that zone. Hasler is Hassler, and you can either go to their Instagram and send a DM to get on the wait list for one of these. Like, these are made by hand, so that it's worth waiting for. Make a fantastic Christmas gift if you could get one by then. But I think you'd be thrilled to get one at any time. They're made in St. Paul, Minnesota. You can also email haslerinstruments@gmail.com. This isn't an ad or a placement. Tom has no idea that we're going to talk about these. I've just been super impressed with mine, and the more I use it, the more I've come to like that it's often better made than half of the watches I'm using it on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that we think they're about $125. I think that's what I spent on the one in Chicago. But whatever they cost, even if it's a little bit more than $125, is that a lot for a spring bar tool? No question. But one, you're supporting a dude in our world, which is worth something to me. And two, it's as good as a spring bar tool could be. Like, eat your heart out, Bergeron, because you're not playing at this level. Tom's doing some great work. I really like this thing and have no problem saying it's perfect. I use it all the time.
Yeah, I agree. I use it almost every day when I'm back home. And Tom's a good guy. And you know, just knowing him, he's got a real eye for detail. And he does not put out a bad product. And if you follow him on Instagram, he puts up a lot of kind of fun videos and reels and things where he shows how to replace the tip or disassemble it or, you know, whatever. And he stands behind his product too. So strong endorsement from both of us, and definitely a perfect product.
All right. Well, there we go. Two non-watch product, perfect products, and two from the watch world. I think that's probably perfect product episode number 5, all buttoned up, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. That was solid. It was fun to revisit our show genre there, and I hope people like it.
Yeah, and for final notes this week, we actually have sort of a mixed bag, which was a sort of a handful of, like, we'll call them TGN alumni. That might be putting on airs a little bit. You know, these people are amazing long before they were on TGN, but we're very thankful to have had them on previous episodes. But there's kind of some news from the world of people who have been on past episodes of TGN that we didn't want to kind of let slip away into the ether. So these final notes we actually kind of picked together. We both thought it was a good idea. And I guess the first of the three is our guy, Henry Catchpole, has moved from Carfection, which, it's my understanding, they're kind of wrapping up operations. And he's now on the Hagerty Network. So I've talked a ton about Hagerty and some of the incredible videos they have on there, whether it's, you know, The Appraiser with Colin Comer or some of Jason Kamisa's stuff. And it really goes in a bunch of different directions, and they do a really, really good job of kind of covering a bunch of different levels. They're also doing a really great series right now with the fantastic car photographer Larry Chen, and he's just documenting like car fascination around the world. They're doing such great work, and now they also have Henry.
Yeah, perfect, right?
I feel like that's the right spot for him. And I believe they're still doing some Carfection videos. I'm still seeing them show up in the feed. So keep watching those, keep liking those, keep sharing their love. I don't know the full story behind that, but that's my understanding for Carfection. And I've been listening and watching Carfection stuff since long before they were even called Carfection. They were X-Car for many years before that. And I've had the pleasure of meeting a couple of the guys involved with that channel, and I'll certainly miss it. But if Henry's got to go somewhere, I think Haggerty's incredible, and I think it's a good one. And I'll include kind of one of his first two or three videos with them, which is a great review of the new 992 911 GT3 RS, in which he even compares it to a pretty high-tech mountain bike. It's a good one, and definitely worth a look. So that's the first thing we wanted to cover in final notes today was... luckily we're not in a world where we won't get great videos from Henry.
Yeah. And there's certainly been no ramp up time for him, moving to Haggerty. The video was spectacularly good. I watched this, 9/11 one just this morning, and, great footage, you know, typical Henry driving. I think he was wearing his MB2 with a TGN strap on it. We're happy to see that. Great work by Henry driving and talking while he's doing both at the same time. I don't know how he drives that fast while he's actually carrying on a coherent conversation.
It's a special skill.
Yeah, right. Our second sort of past TGN guest who's got some interesting and great news these days is Robert Spangle from Thousand Yard Style and the Observer Collection. We've talked a lot about him. He was obviously on a past episode, which we chatted with Robert. He was such a great guest. And so he recently announced he has a new book coming out called Afghan Style. This is being sold through his ObserverCollection.com website. We'll put a link in the show notes. It's up for pre-order now. He's got a kind of a standard edition and then a special edition that will be signed by him. It comes in a slipcover, and also is included with it will be like little artifacts from some of his photo trips to Afghanistan, whether it's a snippet of a 35 millimeter roll of film or a page from his journal or a passport page. He's included a few things. I guess it'll be a surprise what you get. It's a collection of photos that he took on two different trips to Afghanistan, one before the Taliban kind of took over again and the country kind of fell into its recent chaos. And then, you know, one after that, he went back there and shot some amazing photos of Afghan men wearing incredible clothing. So, you know, hats off to Robert. Congratulations on the book. It looks amazing. I've placed my order. I know you did too, James, and can't wait to absolutely get that in my hands. So check that out. Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of those, like, I saw it on Instagram and I was like, oh yeah, couldn't have been easier. He had Apple Pay. It was over in a couple of minutes. And then even later on, I got a text message from a buddy saying like, which version did you buy? And I was like, there were other versions. So I got a standard edition, and I'm very excited to have it here. I love having anything, you know, with Robert's name on it. I'm a huge fan of the products from Observer Collection, and this is, you know, I have a few other, you know, sort of men's style books that I really enjoy, street style books, but this is going to have a perspective that's, you know, almost unique to Robert, which super exciting, and I just always thrilled to see and be able to support folks like Robert.
Right.
All right. And then for the third one, on a very fast sort of list through some cool stuff, is our buddy Cole, Cole Pennington, who's been on a couple episodes of TGN in the past, has started producing some stories for Watches of Espionage. We've talked about Watches of Espionage, which we'll call it WOE, a couple times in the past, certainly. They have a newsletter, which is basically how you get the stories. And the first one is sort of an introduction to Cole and his back history in writing about watches and how he's going to be using the digital page, if you will, with Watches of Espionage to write about watches that were deemed to be too sort of controversial or have too murky or dark of a background to be on a site like Hodinkee. So that's kind of the first story. Right now, you can subscribe to the newsletter. The link to that newsletter and all that will be right in the show notes. And I really implore you to do this. They do some really incredible writing, and you're not going to catch the same topic anywhere else. It's a like a singular pillar of watch content. And I've really enjoyed the newsletter since Cole turned me onto it some time ago. The other plus is they're also soon to be launching a website. You know, I prefer to read things in pocket. So having the stuff only come through Gmail usually means that I put it into print mode and keep it in a tab on one of my browser windows and then read it that evening or on the weekend when I have time. But I'm thrilled to see Watches of Espionage expand, and to say that they're able to expand with Cole is just an added plus. I think it's a great fit for sure.
Yeah. In fact, one just came through my inbox this morning. So yeah, it's good stuff. It's unique content and just kind of fun to get in your mailbox. And I can't wait to see the website. And hats off to Cole for joining up.
Yeah, for sure. So that's our final notes. We've got brand new videos from Henry are now going to be showing up on Haggerty. So if you were subscribed to Carfection, add Haggerty in there. If you haven't already, they have a ton of great stuff. But to have Henry on there is awesome. And then obviously this new book, Afghan Style, from Robert Spangle. And finally, Cole Pennington's writing for Watches of Espionage. Pretty good week for folks from the TGN world, I guess, finding kind of new homes and new projects finally going live.
Yeah, it's really cool to see. And I know of at least one that's coming up that I'll be mentioning in the near future. But, you know, there are plenty of other great folks that we've had on the show that are doing some pretty amazing stuff. And obviously they always were, and that's why we had them on. But
yeah,
it's great to see this evolution. So
yeah, no, that'll be great. And as always, thank you so much for listening. If you want to subscribe to get the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or even consider supporting the show directly and maybe grab yourself a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegraynato.com for more details. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Vince Lombardi, who said, "Choose to achieve perfection. We won't achieve it because perfection is impossible. But by pursuing perfection, we will achieve excellence."